Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo. And welcome to your match preview of Chelsea's trip to Aston Villa. The 8 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday. A very odd kickoff time because there's, I'm pretty sure, a lot of things that people will be doing on Saturday. Especially Chelsea fans after having to sit through that, I mean, embarrassing is, I think, a polite way of putting it. Embarrassing 5-0 defeat to Arsenal at the Emirates. At least it wasn't sixth. I'd have to take Mourinho's crown. I guess there is that. But it wasn't great. Arsenal were completely dominant. And to make matters worse, Kai Havertz actually knew where the goal was twice. So it's not what we wanted to talk about. But there's a lot to unpack before we head to Villa Park. And it is the usual suspects. It is myself and it is Mr. Tomas Masters. Tom, how are we feeling?
Yeah, great, mate. Generally, excellent. Want to talk about Chelsea? Not at the moment. But I'm here, and I'm sure by the end of this pod, I will have convinced myself we're about to go and beat Villa away again.
It does feel very much like a therapy session, this. I think it's a case of...
Another one.
We're going to get it all out, and it's like, okay, we can talk about it, we can move on, and that's all we're going to do. So let's just rip it off like a plaster. Because we've got a 45-minute show here, and later on, you've got 15 minutes dedicated to Sebastian Bacon from the Hulkcast, who will be giving you the option preview for Aston Villa. But look, let's just get straight into that game. When the first goal went in, you just knew it was going to be a long night, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was before the game had even started. When I saw the lineups, I kind of knew what this game was going to be. I've called them dumb and dumber for a little while, those two centre-backs. And they were joined by Sideshow Bob and poor young Alfie Gilchrist, who was rather handed to the wolves. It's obviously nowhere near our starting back four, thankfully. But that's an expensive back four. Obviously, Gilchrist, the only one there, is free. Other than that, it's well over 100 minutes, approaching 150 million on three players who...
Jesus.
I'm really not sure good enough. Not only their fault, obviously. Petrovic not great. Midfield was completely outclassed. Obviously, the news today that Enzo is going to get his operation and his season's over for Chelsea, which I think is probably the right thing. He's not been right, so get it fixed and figure something else out. And then the front three of Mudryk, Jackson and Madueke really, really did test the patience. Not that the ball ever really got to them, but when it did, that one Jackson miss when he hit the side netting. Nearly
that was
forced
awful.
A spoon to go into my eyes, but I managed just to miss my eyes because I was watching Jackson, so I caught it and I missed. But that's that. I mean, it's. I think I said it in the post match review, voice note review, that is the darkest day in Chelsea's Premier League history. I've thought about it since. I think it is.
Yeah, no, it is.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, it absolutely is. I thought City 6-0 might have been close, but then I looked back and I was like, do you know what? Nah, like that is, I think it almost just feels like that is the cherry on the cake for what has been a side in decline over the past 2 years, and that just topped it all off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not good. And I also put the tweet out saying, has anyone ever won a game 6-0 and then lost their next one 6-0? We didn't do that, thankfully.
Did you? And I responded to that.
I did a bit of digging. It's not an easy thing to find. so no, as of yet, it has not been found. It might still be found. I might do more digging. But, God, it was just bleak. And once it got to 2-0, I was like, just watch Havertz score here. And it was a good goal as well. He took it well. And I'm like, okay, where was that at Chelsea? And then he scores again. Oh, great. Nice. They took him off, so he didn't get his hat-trick, thankfully. But Twitter's not been a fun place. You've had Arsenal fans gloating, Chelsea fans rightly very angry and don't really know where to put the blame at the moment. Obviously, in the post-match space, we had a big discussion about who to put the blame on. And I, to be honest, I think it's everyone. The players, a lot of them are not good enough. The manager has made some questionable decisions. The sporting directors have signed players that are not good enough, and they've got a very strange policy of this under-25s nonsense. And I think you can go all the way up to the ownership with Bowley and co. and just question their whole model as well, which I suppose is the same thing as the sporting directors. But yeah, at the moment, Chelsea is in a very strange place. Mm. And I mean, you can't say it's boring, but it's not fun really either. But there we go. That's it. We move on. We've got another game. and another trip to Villa Park. That was our best game of the season earlier on. So
I think before we do move on, I think you made a very interesting point there with just sort of all the noise around Chelsea currently just being. It's a very weird place because, like you said, like are there any teams that win 6-0 and then go and lose 6-0? And there's this sense of euphoria after Everton result in some cases. You and me, it was just a case of, right, we're happy we got that result, but now we need to look forward. And then that happens. And Chelsea's just been so topsy-turvy this year. And you look at Havertz in an Arsenal shirt, he looks far more at home. Best of luck to you, just not against us. You go do whatever you do. But you do question the environment. You do question certain things. And it's just strange to see where we're at. And the policy is also very strange. News obviously came out. So I record this, as Tom said, today. Enzo Fernandez is reportedly going for surgery. And obviously we'll touch on that. That's going to be a very important part of the Echo 11. But of course, alongside that as well, with it being Thursday, there's more noise coming out of Chelsea. Jacob Steinberg reporting that Mauricio Pochettino might actually be under significant pressure. And it's strange to see what happens, but obviously we'll keep up to date with all of that for you. But yeah, we'll look forward now. Obviously Aston Villa next, as you said, our best performance of the season, without a shadow of a doubt. I thought Everton came close, but
those are the two, aren't they?
Yeah, it was a great performance, and it was probably the best in an all-round perspective, as Scotty touched on in the post-match space. And obviously, guys, if you do want to get involved, please do make sure that you get on Final Score with the Score. Get involved in the comments if you're not in the speakers, and we'll be taking the show. I think I'm hosting it this week, actually, as the Score is on his stag do. So he'll probably be, I don't know, in Marbella or Benidorm or wherever he is, you know, giving his...
Hopefully not Birmingham.
Hopefully not Birmingham. Can you imagine that the Score is going to be giving his stats to a stripper? Maybe he'll be sat there. It's like, so what do you think about Mauricio Pochettino at Chelsea? It's like, what is going on? It's like that would be...
I don't know. Who's that?
Who's Mauricio Pochettino?
Do you want a lap dance?
But yeah, no, it's not quite that. So it's going to be me doing Final Score the Score this week with Cam. And Tom, hopefully, will you be joining us this week?
Probably.
Yes!
The result. If we lose, I don't know if I can go through that again.
You're going to have to, unfortunately, mate. It's part of what we're doing, isn't it? So yeah, guys, come and get involved with Final Score. But before we get into it, we do have to do some housekeeping as per. Tom, let's have some positivity in our lives. Because I've been on a bit of a lull, music-wise. Forgotten Banger. Have you got anything which is not going to make me want to cry?
I don't think this will make you cry. I have gone for, unfortunately, something Chelsea are not at the moment, which is Bulletproof by LaRue. What a tune that is. And that, to me, is forgotten. I've not heard that song in a long, long time.
I mean, it's credible. I think there's definitely a case for it. I think Bulletproof
that's all
is
I need.
It's a good tune. It's a good tune. And you know, I think that will definitely do it. If you you know, I'm going to ask you next.
It's on my list for tomorrow evening.
Yeah.
So hopefully come our next recording I'll have it, and you'll be asking that question, and I'll be able to very smugly look at you and go, "Yeah, actually. So what are you doing?" And then I can add it live.
That'd be good. Makes our lives easier then, because keep going and everyone can then start getting involved with the Chelsea Echo Forgotten Bangers playlist. But I've gone down a similar route, actually. Released a couple of years later, and then it kind of came out of my depressive phase after losing 5-0 to Arsenal. I was doing like Mad World by Gary Jules. I was sort of like wanting to cry in a corner. Passenger came on with a bit of Let Her Go, and I was just like slowly wanting to destroy myself. Christina Perry, Jar of Hearts. That made appearance. Bit of Lana Del Rey. And then I realised some guy, Callum Scott, did a song called Dancing on My Own. Everyone's like, oh, it's so sad. Not the original, though. I've gone down the same route as Tom. I lifted myself up. We've gone for Dancing on My Own by Robin, because that is the original and that is the banger. That's what I'm giving you.
I like that. I like that a lot. I also like the explanation. A lot more depth to it than me, who just stumbled across this song the other day. I was like, oh, I haven't heard that for a while. I'm going to take that. And there we go. And that's the formation of the Forgotten Banger for this week.
Love that.
As I said, hopefully there will be a Chelsea Echo Spotify account. Don't know how that's going to happen, but we'll figure something out. B, a playlist. So there you go. Yeah. Things in the pipeline in the near future.
We'll get it moving. And I'm sure people wanted to add to it. Scotty, I'm sure, will have a few words to say on the Forgotten Bangers playlist, as will The Score, as will Cam. Gary will just add Bruce Springsteen and he'll be like, they're not forgotten, Gary. Yeah, but they're classics. Yeah, but that's not the rule. They've always got to be forgotten. But we'll move swiftly on. Next section. It's Tom's big question. What have you got for me?
Well, Birmingham. I was told by you last pod not to do a football-related one because you prefer the randomness and not to go down the Peaky Blinders route. So I thought, fine, I will take that on and I will do it. And I've got for you a bizarre, true or false set of questions about Birmingham. Now, you have to tell me which of these are true and which of these are false. There are five facts or lies about Birmingham. And I will. Then you can tell me what you think. So the first one, everyone's, I don't know, second, third favourite board game, Cluedo, was invented in Birmingham. That's fact number one. I'm going to go through the five facts, and then you can tell me what you think.
Okay.
Number two, J.R.R. Tolkien wrote The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings in Birmingham. Number three, the Thomas the Tank Engine books were written in Birmingham. Number four, Birmingham has more canals than Venice. And number five, Birmingham is the most landlocked city in the UK. So there you go.
I mean,
five statements. What do you think?
Can I say, right, it can't be landlocked if there's lots of canals. And I do know there are quite a few canals in Brum. Because when I went for the cricket, I got for the last 2 years, one of my best mates from home, has lived in Brum. He's a teacher up there now. And we'd always go and watch The 100 at Edgbaston. And there'd be many nights where there's a pub we'd always go to, sit in the sun and just chill. And I remember it's where there's all the canals. And I also remember going to lots of other pubs down lots of other those canals. So I'm going to say yes, true to the canal thing about Birmingham and Venice. Cluedo, I feel like, might be a bit of a throwaway because I'm pretty sure that J.R.R. Tolkien was from Brum. So I'm going to say that's true for Lord of the Rings. I'm going to say Cluedo's false. I think that Thomas the Tank Engine was false, but I'm only basing that on the fact that Ringo Starr did the original narration. Thomas is very sad. And what was the last one?
The last one was the landlocked.
Oh yeah, if it's got the canals, it can't be. Like, that's like, having canals and landlocked doesn't really add up. So I'm going to say that's false.
Okay. Well, I can tell you right now that all five of those are true.
What?
All true. I thought I'd have you. And I sort of did. Cluedo was invented in Birmingham. J.R.R. Tolkien did write The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings in Birmingham. Thomas the Tank Engine, which was written by Wilbert Audrey, the Reverend, was also written in Birmingham. And Birmingham does have more canals than Venice. It also has more parks than Paris. And apparently, although I do like your questioning of whether they have canals being landlocked, but I think landlocked means basically further away from the sea or ocean. And Birmingham is the most landlocked city in the UK. Its nearest beach is 120 miles away in Weston-super-Mare. So there you go. If you didn't know anything about Birmingham before, now you do. And that's what this pod is all about, education.
It's not about education. But yeah, okay, that's fair enough. That's Tom's angle. Tom was right. Tom caught Louis right off guard. Now. That was my impersonation of Ringo Starr doing the voiceover on Thomas the Tank Engine. Which, by the way, all right, I want to say, animated series came out. Not a patch on it. I will not be subjecting my children to the animated series of Thomas the Tank Engine. You'll be dealing with puppets and Ringo Starr from 1970s to the 1980s. And I don't care.
Nothing can beat it.
That, Thunderbirds, Captain Scarlet, boom. That is my childhood. That's exactly what it should be. But
Team America?
Oh, yeah, Team America, but they can wait until they're a little bit older for that, okay?
America.
But, yeah, that is that. But having done all of that, of course, we have to move swiftly on. We've done the big question. We've done the Thorgon Bangout, and we've done the unfortunate Arsenal debrief. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the only part of the show which does have a theme tune. It's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Yes, everyone, you've had your education on Birmingham, now you're having your education on football, and specifically stats.
Football!
About Chelsea and Aston Villa. Football, indeed. Now, Chelsea and Aston Villa have played 165 times over the years, dating back to a classic 0-0 draw in December of 1907. In that 165 games, Chelsea have a slight edge with 69 wins, Villa 60, and 36 draws in that time. But we don't really care about the 1900s too much because that has absolutely zero relevance on whether Chelsea will go to Villa Park and win again on Saturday night. So we're going to look at the last 10 games, which Chelsea also have a slight edge in, having won five of them, drawing two and losing three. And that those five wins obviously do include that incredible 3-1 win at Villa Park in February, which obviously we've already spoken about. Arguably, I don't even think it is arguable, it was Chelsea's best performance of the season. However, last two Premier League games between these two have both been won by Aston Villa, 2-0 and 1-0, although both of them were at Stamford Bridge, so we're going to discount them as well. We're going to look at just now Premier League games at Villa Park. This is where it gets more promising if you are a Chelsea supporter. Chelsea have a pretty good record, outstanding you could even say, recently there, winning seven of their last 10 matches at Villa Park, drawing once and only on losing on two occasions in May 2021 and March 2014. So quite a big gap between those two defeats. So there you go. There's a little reason for Chelsea to be positive looking at that recent bit of data from Villa Park. On to the manager, Maurizio Pochettino. He has a narrow advantage over Aston Villa, winning six of his 11 matches against the Villains, two draws and three losses in there as well. However, two of those wins have come in the FA Cup, obviously including the Chelsea one recently. So when you put it into context of the Premier League, his record is actually four wins, one draw and three losses. He's tasted defeat with each of the English side he's managed against Villa, Southampton, Tottenham and Chelsea. All, as I said, of those defeats came in the Premier League. And his last Premier League win against Aston Villa came while at Tottenham in August 2019. Overall, Poch's record, 17 goals scored, 9 goals away, and all three of his losses came by just one goal. So not a bad record. Hopefully, it can get better this weekend. On to the opponent themselves, Aston Villa. Well, they are now the Premier League's sole competitor in Europe after Arsenal and Manchester City exited slightly tamely in Arsenal's case from the Champions League, and Liverpool and West Ham as well from the Europa League. So they are, and they're also in pole position to secure Champions League football for next year by virtue of finishing fourth, currently 6 points ahead of Tottenham. That penalties win in Lille following Matty Cash's late equaliser. Oh, indeed. 2-1 they lost that game in the match itself. But that's the sole game in which Villa have not won in 90 minutes, I guess you could say, in their last five. A 3-3 draw against Brentford was not an ideal result for Unai Emery, but he followed that up with an astonishing 2-0 win over Arsenal, something Chelsea obviously couldn't do, and a 3-1 win over Bournemouth, as well as the 2-1 win over Lille in the home leg. Their form generally since returning from the international break has been pretty outstanding. However, there were a couple of concerning heavy defeats either side of it. That Tottenham loss 4-0 at Villa Park was quite a fall from grace in a performance. And then they got absolutely torn apart by Phil Foden and Manchester City in a 4-1 defeat just after it. Overall, though, Villa looking pretty, playing for a lot, and it's not going to be an easy game. Now, normally I'd say it's back to you in the studio, and I will this time, but with a slight twist, because opposition previews are back. So it's back to you in the studio, Louis, but with an Aston Villa fan.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo and welcome to your opposition preview. Something which we've not done for a little while here at the Echo, but is your opposition preview of Aston Villa. Obviously, heading up to Villa Park for the 8 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. And I'm joined by Sebastian Bacon from the Hulkcast. Seb, how are you feeling, mate? You all right?
Yeah, now that we've got our pre-recording complications out of the way, the media tech.
Only took 20 minutes to get an 18-year-old to know how to use the fucking internet. How is that possible? How are you so illiterate?
I can only apologize.
You were born in the year 2000, and, mate, you should know how this works better than I do.
I can only apologize, but I'm excited to finally get talking about Villa, and it's always nice to be back talking to you as well.
Yeah, it's all right, it's all right. Well, for those of you that didn't know, I managed at Wolves last year, and Seb was the captain for Upload United, so he absolutely smashed it on the pitch that day, got his steps in as well, which isn't too bad. Everyone loves getting their steps in, and we won a trophy, which I don't know if Ben just still got or not. But yeah, it was a good day, and I'm sure we'll be doing it again soon. But we're not here to talk about that. As much as it was a great cause, it was a great day, it was lovely, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about our visit to you guys, 8 o'clock on Saturday, after what can only be described as probably the most horrendous football game I've ever seen Chelsea compete in ever. And I was there when we lost 6-0 to Manchester City, but that was Manchester City. Losing 5-0 to Arsenal was not something I ever thought I'd find on the cards in my footballing life. But look, we're rubbish, I think it's fair to say, but you guys, I don't think anybody expected you to be doing as well as you're doing this season.
No, I think you are correct in that. We're definitely exceeding expectations. We're exceeding my expectations as well. I remember at the start of the season, you know, a lot of people were talking about where they think we might end up, and I said I would be probably content with a top 8 finish. I said if we can get back into Europe with our European campaign, then, you know, that would be the perfect campaign for us. But Unai Emery continues to defy all expectations and has been rightly rewarded with a new contract. The love I have for that man has no boundaries, and long may it continue.
With Unai Emery, I know we spoke previously on with you guys before the FA Cup game. How has he done this? Because if you look at how Villa was shaping up under Gerrard before Emery came in, you guys look destined for the drop, look like another side which had come up from the Championship, stabilised for a couple of years, but looked like they were going to go straight back down eventually. But he's taken you guys, with the squad you have as well, with a lot of players I think a lot of people consider not Champions League quality, into those places. So how is that possible? How has he done this?
I wish I had all the answers for you. I think a little part has to play with just how far Gerrard was underperforming with the squad we had. But also, I think he's managed to enhance Ollie Watkins' abilities, which is the main thing. Watkins wasn't firing under Gerrard. We obviously had that time period where people were going, well, do you start Watkins? Do you start Ings? The first thing Emery did when he came in was ship Danny Ings at the first opportunity. And it almost seems to the fans like he said to Ollie, look, you're my man. You know, you're going to be starting every week, so show me what you can do. I don't know whether you heard yourself, but Troy Deeney went on TalkSport ages ago and said that he compared Ollie Watkins to a failed winger trying to be a striker. Now, Emery sort of stopped him playing out wide completely. If you watch Watkins, he'll do all the running, he'll do all the hard yards, but you will very barely see him on the ball out wide, out on the flanks. He will maintain that position, and getting the ball to him, I back him to score 9 times out of 10 now. The way that he's improved himself and, like I say, just enhanced into this incredible striker, I think Emery has to play a part in that.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, I'll be honest, I semi-agree with Troy Deeney's comments to a certain extent. I think that the problem with Troy Deeney, and I think he's got a fantastic footballing brain. I like how honest he is. But he does fail to sugarcoat his words sometimes to the point where it does come across in the wrong way. I do think it's interesting to see Ollie Watkins because, look, I've been a big fan of him for a long time. You know, he was one of my first signings whenever I did a career mode when he was back at Crewe Alexandra. One of the things that I always used to laugh at was that he could never finish for love nor money. And then this year he's now up there for the Golden Boot race alongside Cole Palmer and Erling Haaland. And I think it's really interesting to see how he's made that move into the middle, because failed winger is probably the wrong terminology, but he naturally is a winger. That's where he plays. So the way that he's moved into there has been really exciting. It's obviously allowed for other players to come into the side. I mean, who's probably flourished the most off of Ollie Watkins moving into the middle? And how has that whole dynamic in the team changed?
Leon Bailey would be my first port of call. He comes to mind. Again,
a proper Chelsea, mate. Proper Chelsea.
Another one that struggled under Gerrard. He received a lot of criticism in his time when he first moved to England, and he struggled to adapt. And you could see that he was frustrated. I think the turning point for me was there was a moment where we played Wolves at home under Emery, and it finished 1-1, and Bailey was through in the, I think it was 96th minute, and he rounded the keeper, and the net was open, and he put it into the side netting. And he walked off the pitch in tears, and everyone said that'll be the end of Leon. He can't cut it. He's just not performing. He obviously had that injury when he first moved, which set him back as well. But ever since then, he's come back, and he is absolutely flying. He doesn't start every week, which I think has taken him some adapting. But every time he comes on, you know he's going to do a job. He was the difference between us and Lille the other day, getting us into the semi-final, coming off the bench. He changed the game. I don't know whether you've seen that viral clip going around of him almost being a leader out on that pitch and just telling his teammates, we've just gone 2-0 down. And he was going, hey, calm down. We've got time. Look at the clock. We've got time. And that's a side that we haven't seen to him before. He's been more of a perhaps shy. We haven't seen that leadership. And the way that he's carrying us on the football pitch, goals and assists, he's electric. The amount of times that we've work the ball into midfield, and then we have Bailey and Watkins running at the defenders, and we're going, hello, this is something here, this is going to work. And 9 times out of 10, they're able to create a chance out of it. The thing that, going back to your question about Emery, with the players that I've mentioned, the one thing that he's created in this Villa team is a sense of fear for the opposition, which I perhaps don't think we had before. With exactly the same players under Gerrard, I'm sat in my seat now at Villa Park, and if I see those two running at the opposition defenders, no matter who they are, we've proved it by doing the double against Arsenal, we've proved it by beating City at home, I feel confident that they will create a chance and perhaps take that chance.
Mm. Well, that's something which I don't think we can do very well. So someone's got to do it at some point, haven't they? But, I mean, you've spoken about the strength in your attack. Obviously, defensively, that is what Unai Emery specialises in. He's a defensively resolute coach. How's the bulk of the midfield and the defence sitting? So is it quite a compact style? I know he likes to play the high line, which obviously we took advantage of in the FA Cup tie. But is it a case of he likes to see the side compact, but also to see the defence push high up the pitch as well, to be more exciting and aggressive at the same time as being compact?
Yeah, I think we've been able to see the best of both so far this season. We're not afraid to sit in and drop deep like we did at the Emirates for the first half. But then also, once we get momentum and we get the ball up the pitch, you will see those centre-backs and the full-backs fly up, and we'll almost pen you in to a fact that when you clear the ball, you're just clearing it to a Villa man who's, you know, our deepest player will be Pau Torres, who's still 20 yards inside our own half. He will just pick the ball up, spray it out wide, and we'll go again. He's created a patient Villa team, one that isn't afraid to work the ball, tire out the opposition, play the ball from side to side. It's difficult saying definitely whether it will be compact or not, because it depends on who's playing in that back line, and that may sound like a simple thing to say, but our best defence this season has been Konsa playing right back, with Carlos, Torres and Digne at left back, with Konsa almost occupying that third centre back role, allowing Digne to go up the flank a bit more. However, if Matty Cash starts, which he has done recently, again coming back from injury, he made a massive impact at Lille and again at the weekend, then Konsa will slip back into the centre-back position. Carlos will be dropped with Torres, so it might be Digne and Cash going forward a bit more. Digne might even be the one to sit into that third centre-back role, with Cash operating higher up the pitch. It's difficult because we've obviously lost Kamara, who provided us a lot of solidity. I think a lot of our defensive tenacity, if you like, under Emery has been down to Kamara just sitting in front of that back four. I think the work he does goes understated sometimes. It goes under the bar. So without him, it's been difficult to transition. But our central midfielders, Douglas Luiz, whether he plays, Tielemans, McGinn, they've all been able to step into that role and occupy it well. So almost, I don't want to cop out of your question, but it does depend.
You don't know. Is that the thing with Emre? Is that the one thing where you don't know what side's going to play?
Yeah, exactly.
So is that a weakness, do you think?
No, maybe,
or is it a, it's not?
No, I'd see it as a strength, because even with the same personnel, we could have Konsa right back still. But then you could see Konsa bombing up the flank, and you're going, well, what's going on here? We're not used to this. This is a centre back who seems so comfortable on the ball, who doesn't have many attacking outputs, but once he's up there, he looks like a natural right back. And you know, when the Villa team is in full flow, it is the best football I have ever seen at Villa Park. And granted, I haven't been going for too long, and we haven't had that many joys since I've been going. But there have been times this season, and even the back end of last, where I've gone, wow, if we play like that, there's not many teams in this league that can stop us. But we have to be on our day. Every team will say this. It obviously depends what Villa turn up. I'm sure you've said it many times this season. Depends what Chelsea turns up.
Yeah, I've said it a few times. Quite a few times.
But yeah, without saying the cliche too much, if we're in full flow, then I'd back us to beat any team in the league, like we've proved.
That's what terrifies me the most about going to you guys, because your transition period and your growth, it's almost gone unnoticed. I think when Emery came in, you guys were probably tipped as favourites to go down. It wasn't looking good. I think it was like you and Palace. It wasn't sure which one it was going to be. That was maybe going to be sitting lower down the table. And then you've brought in Unai Emery, which I think at the time I thought was quite a shocking announcement as well. Because thinking, really? Emery to Villa? Like he's clearly found a good surrounding for him, which I think is something which is massively understated. But then it's a flip of a coin. It's a completely different team. And that's what terrifies me the most, because a lot of those players, if you'd said to me 3 years ago, Mings, Konsa, Matty Cash, John McGinn, you know, that's just four names. Maybe, you know, I'll chuck Ollie Watkins in there as well. Those five names, if you'd have told me they'd be contending for Champions League and doing it comfortably, not like a flash in the pan, they'd be contending for Europe, pushing on, doing well, not caring the world almost, comfortably in the Conference League, comfortably pushing for Champions League, at the back end of a season, I'd have laughed you out the room. It's amazing to see how this side has developed. You're a very good football team, and we're not. And I was when we went to Villa Park for the FA Cup game, I looked at it and I went, "Yeah, nah, this is a loss. We're not going to get anything here." But then we put in probably the best display of our season in that game. And obviously, I'm sure Emre is going to have learnt a lot from that game. What do you think he'll look at there as, okay, this is what we need to learn from it, this is what we need to take for it, and make sure that that result doesn't happen again?
Look, let's not beat around the bush. I'm still very nervous about Saturday.
Are you?
Yeah, 100%.
Why?
Because I've been a Villa fan for too long to know that things are never comfortable with my football. Villa could be one of the only teams in the world where they see their opposition lose 5-0, could have been more, absolutely drubbed at the weekend.
Should have been more.
And still go, yeah, we're in for a tough game on Saturday. we're going to be up against it. But whether that's just my mindset and me being a pessimist. Look, you played us off the park in the fixture in the FA Cup. I was there. You were comfortably the better team and completely deserved to go through. What would he have learnt? I have no idea, because that man's brain works in a way that I wish I could compute. Honestly, the sheer genius that he is for what he's done and for what he's taught us Villa fans. I'm just certain that he will have watched that game, the Chelsea game where you beat us, at least a minimum of 50 times over. I mean, it's come out in the press that, you know, the days that he works is just relentless. He knows what he's doing. When you look at Emery, you see a manager, for me personally, who is in control all the time. He always knows what to expect. And that level of calmness will transfer onto the players. And I think that will help them. They will know every single play that Chelsea have. Whether you do it successfully, you might do. You might be in a position where you go, look, we have our plan. We're going to execute it, and we're going to execute it really well. And it might be one of the days that Chelsea turns up this season and they look on it.
You've talked about how Emery is going to be so meticulous. Is there anywhere for this Chelsea side to target and potentially really, really nail down and make the most of in this game on Saturday?
Set pieces.
Really?
We cannot defend a set piece for love nor money. Also, if you score, it will probably be within the 45th or 60th minute, because something ridiculous like 48% of our goals conceded this season have come between the second half restart and the 60th minute.
Don't worry about that, mate. We're always awful at the restart.
We're just going to both look absolutely terrible. But if you get a corner, I think that's where you'll score on us, because I think we've operated for zonal marking, which I personally don't agree with anyway.
Well, it's important for both our seasons, because obviously we're still chasing those European spots and potentially Europa League on the cards, but we'll have to see what happens with that. You guys, Champions League, you'll get it, won't you? That's confident now?
No. Spurs have two games in hand. We're 6 points ahead, but they have two games in hand. I get the opposition, and I get that, you know, it looks in our favour. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. The position we're in is comfortable, and it's favourable. And Pete, I'd rather have the points on the board than the games in hand. However, it's no. I think if we beat you, we'll sit there and say it's done. Simply because we will be 9 points ahead of Spurs. They'll have three games in hand, them being Liverpool, City, and... Is it yourselves? Or Arsenal? No, Arsenal, I believe.
We've still got to play Spurs as well.
So they've got to play Arsenal, you, City, and Liverpool. So look, it's going to be tough. However, if they get it, it will mean they deserve it. But if we're in a position where we sit 9 points ahead of them, and they have to win every single one of their games in hand, I would feel comfortable sitting here and going, I think it's done. Until then, not a chance.
Well, let's see. No doubt you and I will be chatting about that game post. I think it's probably going to be a Chelsea defeat. I'm not confident at all, but we'll have to see. But guys, if you do want to hear more stuff on Villa, obviously ahead of the game and post game for the rest of the season, and have many a good evening, make sure that you check out the Hotcast. There'll obviously be a link to it on the Twitter promotion tweet. But this has been Sebastian Bacon. Mate, where can they find you?
We're on Spotify, we're on Acast, we're on iTunes, and it is at Hotcast. We've massively done a rebranding, which is why I'm probably not used to promoting this. We've changed all our names, we've changed everything. So go and check out the new graphics, the new name, and the new style of podcast, and let us know what you think.
Amazing. Well, thanks, guys, and we'll see you back for the Echo 11. Ta-da. That was a nice little twist, wasn't it? Boom, I like that. It felt weird not saying thanks, Tomas, but I do miss it. But anyway, thanks, Tomas, for introing Sebastian Bacon from the Hulkcast. But as we said, it's time to get into it. Echo 11. This is going to be terrible.
The thing is, I haven't had an update on a lot of players, so I don't really know who's fit. So it's hard to make too many changes. Obviously, we know Enzo's out, but yeah. Is Palmer back? You know, is Gusto back? What's the situation with Levi Colwill? I've heard a couple of weeks ago he was nearly back. So what's going on with all these people?
So if you follow the Chelsea Echo, Tom, on Twitter, as I'm sure you do, you will have seen that Levi Colwill was actually back in training. So we'll have to see what happens with that. He is returned to Cobham, according to Mr. Bobby Vincent. So I think we'll have to see what happens with that. But I'm going to put him in because I'm desperate and I need something. I think we should run with Cole Palmer being unavailable. Obviously, our midfield is pretty light as it is. Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm thinking. So we'll have to see what happens. But I feel we need to talk about Jordi Petrovic. I really do. How do you feel about him, mate? I mean, he's better than Bobby Sanchez. He's going to start, but...
Yeah, he's going to start for the rest of the season. I don't think either of them are good enough long-term. So whether we dip into the market this summer for a keeper, or whether we have to stick with him, or whether we bring Kepa back in, as he's not wanted by Madrid. So that's potentially something that's going to happen. I don't know, because obviously there are other positions we need to look at as well, and we can't do all of them in one window. Although with this board, you never know. So no, I don't think he's good enough long-term, unfortunately. He's had a pretty long run in the team now, and he's still making mistakes. Although he did make a couple of good saves. So I don't know. He'll have the rest of the season, so maybe he can turn it around. But for now, in the Echo 11 for this weekend, is no doubt about that. He's in goal.
Okay, so you got Jordy Petrich in goal. I'll just have a little bit of looking on Cole Palmer. There's a 50% chance of him playing, so I reckon that we're going to side with the devil in our ear on this one, and I'm going to say he's going to be included. after saying I don't think he would be. But okay. We've got, obviously, Jordy Petrich in goal, back four. I mean, can I be
at least three changes.
I mean, Ben Chilwell's unavailable, so good luck with that. I think Kukurea, to be honest, wasn't at fault for a lot of what happened in that game. And I put that down to him not being supported by Mikhailo Mudryk, who I thought had an absolute howler, was a passenger against Arsenal. And I thought he was left exposed quite a lot with Ben White and Bukayo Saka basically overlapping him on his own, and Mudryk stood there with his hand on his hips. I'm gutted about Mudryk because I think there's a player in there, but he needs a loan. I think he needs to go away somewhere where he can be the main man and learn. And he won't be making my 11 personally. But yeah, I mean, I still think Kukurea deserves the opportunity. He'd be in my 11. But I mean, you're saying you make a different change. What would you do?
No, I don't know. I don't know what I would do. I potentially would put Colwell there, but he's just coming back from an injury, so I don't know if you want him running up and down at left back. And I don't know if you want to completely change the entire back four, because I'm definitely changing the other three. So I'll allow Kukurea this week. I don't think he was, by no means, was the worst player against Arsenal, but I do think for that Ben White goal, the first one, you've got to question what he's doing there. And just generally, he doesn't do it for me. I've said that for a while. But yeah, fine. Kukurea can hold his left-back spot, one of probably not many survivors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as I say, I'm changing the rest of the back three. I'm assuming that Colwell is fit, which actually is going to be quite harsh on either Silva or Trevor Chalobah, because they've actually both been playing quite well recently. I don't actually know where I'd go. I think I would go... Ooh.
We and you are thinking very differently, just so I'd let you know about this. Because I've got... I think I probably should have prefaced what I was saying earlier with what I've got. I've gone for a back five with the lack of Enzo Fernandez.
I'm going for a more attacking team with the lack of Enzo Fernandez. So I'm still going for a four. And I think... Oh, I don't know. I don't know what I do. I think I'm going to go no Thiago Silva. Perhaps controversially, I'm going to go Colwell and Chalobah. I think Villa are quite a dynamic, quick team. So having two dynamic, quick centre-backs, I think, would be useful. And then Silva can come off the bench if needed to bring an experience head-on. Hopefully not when we're 5-0 down again. That was not really great, especially considering it seemed his grandma died a few days before. So not brilliant, but there we go. More interesting man management from Poch. Right back, I'm praying that Malo Gusto is back. Otherwise, I don't really know what we do, because Gilchrist did not have a good game.
There is no return date on Malo Gusto right now. Currently being assessed.
It's not ideal.
So
not ideal. Well, if it's not him...
I'm putting Alfie back in. I prefer it. I prefer it. I just don't think De Zassi's got the mobility. I always thought you were quite harsh saying Dumb and Dumber, but... I don't know what's happened to Benoit Badiashile, because there was a pretty solid centre-back in there and that's just completely disappeared. Axel De Zassi is 25, currently about to turn 26. So that's a player who's reaching the prime of his career.
He's got to go then. He's too old for this club now.
Yeah, well, he to be honest, he doesn't look... I don't look at him and go, oh yeah, what a player.
I never have.
I don't know. And for me, if you look at it, would he start at Villa? No. Would he start at Spurs? No. Would he start...
None of the big three, obviously. Well, the top three currently, obviously.
Would he start at Brighton? Would you reckon he'd get into that Brighton team based on how we like to operate currently?
He's not better than Lewis Dunk. I don't know. No, probably not. He wouldn't get in the Newcastle team, even with their injuries. I don't know where he does get in, but somewhere down the bottom end of the league. I just I don't know. He came from a Monaco team that were, I think they were the third or fourth best defence, so obviously him and Badiashile in Ligue 1, which is not particularly impressive, to be honest. They're not quite as bad as people were saying, that they were like a terrible Monaco team. They're okay, but they're not outstanding players. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't rate either of them particularly highly, and that's hence calling them dumb and dumber. But there we go.
Okay, fair enough. We've got that. But I mean, let's move on to the midfield. So obviously I've done a back five. Yeah. I was hoping Mal Augusto might be fit, but he wasn't. But my team, I've gone for Cucurella. I've started Silva in the middle. I've gone for Levi Colwill, left centre-back. Trevor Chalobah, right centre-back. I've gone Alfie, right wing-back. I've gone for a double pivot. I've gone for Caicedo and Gallagher. I know you've got a three-man midfield. What have you gone for?
Yeah, same pivot, but then Carney in front of them.
Okay.
Chukwuemeka against his old club. Let him cook. I think he's a great player. He's not had his opportunities. Enzo being out, I think, is an opportunity to let him have a few games and see what he can do.
Okay. Interesting. Kind of Chukwuemeka further ahead in the 10. And then my front three, I've gone for Nico. I'm chucking Cole Palmer in and telling to have some paracetamol and grow up. And then left wing. Oh, my God, left wing. What do you even do there? What do you even do, Tom?
Well, mine's different from yours.
What have you gone for?
I'm going, again, inspired by the last Villa game, Jackson on the left, Palmer through the middle, and then, based on their recent performances, probably Sterling on the right.
Yeah, okay, I'll have that. I'll take that front three as well.
That's what I'm going to do.
I agree with that. Okay. All right, then. That's not a terrible team, you know.
It's not, no, but a few ifs there. On A, whether Poch actually does it, and B, whether you know our best player by a mile is fit. And whether Colwell's fit, but I don't mind Thiago Silva and Chalobah, but they've both been playing well recently.
Yeah, I didn't understand why they didn't play against Arsenal, but no. You know,
I can understand Silva if he was obviously grieving and wasn't there, but then he was there and he came on, so if he can come on, he could play. But anyway,
yeah, I guess it's just an odd one. But yeah, we'll move on. That is the Echo 11 for you. So let's know your thoughts on the better 11 and what you think about it. But yeah, look, I mean, it's fair to say that we've got to bounce back from what happened on Tuesday, and we've got to make sure that we can do the business. But Tom, I mean, we've got a template performance, right? We know how to beat Aston Villa at Villa Park. Surely we've got to use that, but it's going to be very tough considering maybe half the team that was there is going to be unavailable.
Yeah, I mean, they're a good side, and they're managed well, as they proved against Arsenal. The thing about them that I think might suit us is what we saw last time. They play with quite a high line, and they attack. They don't tend to sit back. They did against Arsenal, but they're away. They're obviously playing against the top of the league. It's Emery against Arsenal. He's always going to be a bit more shithousy in a game like that. So I think it could play into our hands. And I think if we can hit a similar level of performance to that, we should win. But big if, because we haven't been consistent at all this season. I don't know, after a result like Arsenal, heads can drop completely for the rest of the season and players can check out, or they could be inspired to, no, come on, let's turn this around. I suspect it will be a bit of both, depending on the player. So I honestly don't know what to expect, which has been pretty much every game this season. But as I said, I'm positive because we've done it before this season, and I wonder if that will play into Villa's minds as well, because obviously they're under pressure to secure top four, which they've not done in a very long time. So the pressure's on them, but we need to turn up. Otherwise, I think that's Europe done for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something to consider. I mean, we're 3 points shy of seventh right now. We've got a game in hand that is against Spurs, who are also going to be chasing Aston Villa for that final Champions League spot. Because I'm sure that Liverpool are going to have the third one sewn up, despite that 2-0 loss at Goodison Park, which ended their title hopes. That didn't go well for you, did it, Jurgen? Farewell, parade! I'm clutching at straws for anything that can make me happy. But obviously, yeah, you know, it's a case of we are 3 points shy. Game in hands against Spurs, which would be great. It's not impossible for us to get some form of strong European football, but we need to get something here really to make sure that it can happen, can't we, Tom?
Yeah, I think, especially looking at the games that the two sides just above us have, United and Newcastle. I mean, Newcastle got Sheffield United at home. United have Burnley at home. I'd be surprised if they don't both win. Obviously, United are a bit all over the place, so you never know what they're going to do. But I expect both of those teams to win. And therefore, if we don't win, then that's 6 points and 9 points, I think it would be, respectively. behind those two teams. And I think at that point, it's probably game over. Because although we do have a game in hand, it's a difficult game, Spurs. We still got to play I know we played Arsenal now. God. We still got West Ham. You know, Bournemouth, Forest, who are fighting. We've not got an easy end to this season at all. This is a very important game. I think if we're serious about getting Europe, we need to get a result in this game and stay in touch with those two teams. Because as I say, I'd be surprised if they don't both win.
Mm. Do you think that? I mean, we've obviously laid out our teams, but how confident are you with dealing with that Villa front line? So obviously, speaking to Seb, he was talking about, you know, Leon Bailey since he's found his feet again. You've got Ollie Watkins, as you've already said, on fire, unbelievable player. Chelsea Football Club, just throw everything you can at that, please, if you don't get Ivan Toney. But, I mean, how do you think we can cope with this team? Because our injury list is insane, and I hate using that as an excuse. Like, whenever people come to me and said, oh, but, you know, we've got a really bad injury list, and I go, yeah, but you've got the quality and depth. We don't have the quality and depth. We don't have the strongest side. Their heads are going to be down. No matter what they say, their heads are going to be on the floor after that defeat to Arsenal. Do you think we realistically can go and do the business here?
Yeah, I think we can. I think the big thing is, and that's a good point on heads being low, being dropped. I think at the start of the game, they'll be up for it. They'll want to prove a point. I think if Villa score first, that's it. I think that'll be game over. I think it's one of those where the heads are going to be in a difficult place, but you can go for it. And if we score first, then okay, right, we can do this. If we concede first, I think, especially with a young squad, it can be, oh God, here we go. And then heads can go. No Enzo, I feel like he's one who perhaps doesn't, you know, isn't as fazed by things like that. If Thiago Silva doesn't start, then, you know, you've kind of got Gallagher on his own trying to lead that, and it's just, it's not working. I think that's been a big problem all season. So if we concede, I think we're in trouble. If we can could score first or hold out for, you know, an hour, and then you know, there'll be belief then. But ultimately, these players have got to, you know, I know Villa are fourth and they're a great side and they're playing well and they manage well, but this is Aston Villa and this is Chelsea. You need to think about that as a player and put a little bit of respect into the jersey after Tuesday night, because that was bleak.
Yeah, as much as that little lad obviously held up the banner and was like, well, look, I don't want your shirt, I want you to fight for ours. And that's been a recurring comment from a lot of fans this season. So, look, I think after that result against Arsenal, all we can do now is say, go and give your all, give 100%.
Yeah.
And let's just hope we can get the results we need for the end of the season. But
fight and win.
No, you just ruined it. There was really emotive there, and then you just went full Seattle Sounders. It's you look like him a bit as well, to be fair. That's something which I'm never going to be able to unsee that now.
Probably the worst thing you've ever said to me.
Yeah, I know.
Or anyone.
You strike me as a sort of bloke who in March would wear a gilet and a scarf with a polo shirt with the collar turned up.
I would never put the collar up unless I was playing cricket and protecting my neck from the sun / pretending to be Graham Swan. Other than that, I would wear a polo shirt with a gilet, yes. I wouldn't wear a scarf as well. If you're wearing a gilet, it's not scarf season. You can't have both.
Like, this is the whole point of what I'm not getting a conversation about gilets. We need to end the pod. All right, this will go on forever. Everyone knows I fucking hate gilets. They are the most pointless piece of attire on the planet, and that is final. But we're not in sort about that. We're talking about the Chelsea, and Chelsea are heading out to Villa Park on Saturday. Obviously, make sure you tune into Final Score with The Score. Myself, Tom, Cam, probably Gary, Mario will be back. Scotty might be back as well. Lots of voices to talk about the not-so-mighty Chelsea Football Club. But before you do that, right, make sure you give us a 5-star review here on the Chelsea Echo. It's always nice to get a nice review and say how much you love us. And, you know, we are pretty fucking great, if I say so myself. Maybe me more than Tom. But, you know, it's what it is. You know, he does all right. He does what he needs to. And if you have enjoyed the pod, make sure you tell your nan, tell your hamster, tell your dog, tell your postman, tell the person wearing a gilet with a scarf, it is not gilet and scarf season, and make sure you tune in for the next pod. Take care of yourselves, guys. See you later. Ta-da.
Bye.